Sean Salisbury in 4 minutes. It's 8:02. Time to visit a Sharif Jewelers for that special Valentine's Day gift. And I may or may not have already gotten a nice gift for my work wife, Katie, and I'm thinking of taking that back. We have a whole off-air argument going this morning.
Oh,
Katie has been traveling a ton, and Katie, very understandably, has been under the weather for a while now. Now
this is tune up.
Not going to rip her for this. I don't blame her at all. I think it's almost impossible to not get sick, especially when you travel that much and that many plane flights in that short a time. Katie is in here today. And Katie and I, before the show, got in an argument because I was trying to get her to go home. She's not. She's here. You may have noticed if you heard the hacking in the background.
There's a reason why I don't go home.
Why?
Well, because I've been sick for 2.5 months, and I've been working through it anyway.
Yes.
And there's no, I haven't been here. This is my first time at the station in like over 2 weeks.
True.
And I have to work tonight.
Yes.
So why would I call in sick for one job and work the other?
So you don't get your coworkers sick?
But I'm not, Dave, you haven't gotten sick this entire time. I've been sick this entire time.
You've been gone. Remember, you just said it. You've been gone.
We've just been a week together.
Yeah. I'm just saying,
big baby.
I'm on vacation next week. I'm telling you, I'm getting sick. I'm getting sick because of this. And then I told her, she's not going to let me blame her. She's going to blame it on my kids or something.
I'm going to tell you, there's one reason why I don't have any sympathy for Katie at all. Mm-hmm. And it's because I know that she does far more preparation in her free time than she ever needs to.
You get on her for this,
I
too?
I know she's
I
got time to
this.
Sleep. She just needs to use it.
I went to bed last night before 9 o'clock.
I didn't know Nate was on team over prep. Katie, you should be so mad at him.
Someone's
right
got to do it, but sometimes just like, dude, here's the deal. She could have gone home 2 hours ago. You think she's going to sleep at all before? You think she would sleep at all? Hell no.
No.
Katie, you'd be fine as something. You'd be writing in your notes. You'd be make sure you're getting prepared for tonight or tomorrow's show, which, by the way, there's a reason that, you know, you went to a UC and you're a valedictorian. You did all those awesome things.
You got
an academic All-American and have two jobs.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Because I prepare.
I mean, better to be overprepared than underprepared. That's very true.
Well, I'm going to just tell you, you know.
I'll tell you the same thing I tell.
It only takes one failure in radio to realize you're doing it too hard.
Great point right there.
I'll tell you the same thing that I tell Dave every time he has this discussion with me.
You never play.
Until you understand what my job entails,
yes.
You can't tell me. Okay. That I overprepare.
Uh-huh. I think we're getting.
I know what this job entails.
I know.
I think we're getting lost in the fact that you should not be here.
Would you like me to go home right now?
I wanted you
with
to go
an
home.
Hour left.
I wanted
the
you
show.
To go home at 6. Now it's over.
I was in here at like 4:45. When
I wanted you to be gone
guys,
before
show
the show
up.
Started.
Is Sean ready?
No.
I hope so.
Sorry, it's over now. Now we're in this freaking soundless air tube.
Dude, seriously, would you guys like me to just stand up against the wall and you can pelt me with things?
No.
Because that is what this feels like right now.
Just saying. You got to consider your coworkers. You want to hear
that? I'm not the one that told you to go home.
That's true. That was me. I'll take the blame.
I know you won't use your time if you go home.
Here's the BBC call of the Super Bowl victory. I love
the
that.
The most remarkable of circumstances.
Love the British call. They always come through. And I think, and special props before we get to Sean to the British for making that call. Because here's the thing.
Sounds like soccer.
They've dealt with a lot. And for them to come over and be able to get excited about the biggest American sport there is after the thrashing they took at Yorktown in 76.
I was going
to
say, are you going into history
absolutely.
Right now? Oh,
like,
my God.
That was the biggest comeback of all time. Okay? That was George Washington is the GOAT. Screw Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And for you to make that call and really sound excited, God bless you, Britain. Uh-huh. Good for you.
Oh, Dave.
You Brexit your ass out of here and let us watch football. Dear Lord. Sean Salisbury. Hey, Sean.
What's happening, guys?
Hey, just making fun of the British. What are you doing?
Listen, do you make fun of the
British? We got a list of things to go through with you, Sean, because we have been yammering all day about all the sports talk stuff. Now, here's a guy who actually played the position, and Sean's not afraid, if you know him, to say exactly what's on his mind. So, number one, was that the greatest Super Bowl of all time, in your opinion?
Unless I'm trying to think. I mean, the Patriots-Seahawks game was pretty impressive down the stretch, but for play after play, the way that the shift of momentum, the big plays, catches by Julio Jones that we won't even talk about, the throw to Edelman, not the one he catches with Bob, but the one that Brady had no business making that throw and he put it right on. I mean, I can go on and on. It wasn't you know, we talk about limiting big plays. I mean, there was play after play after play after play. I've never seen a better one, and I've never seen a shift in momentum so blatant, and I've never seen so many people quit on the greatest quarterback of all time. And like, I'll never, when it was 28-3, my brother was posting stuff on Facebook, and people were sending me stuff. A buddy who I made a $500 bet, I simply said two words: stay tuned. And that's all I said. When it was 28-3, I said, stay tuned. And you know what? Then they got the score and missed the extra point. And they scored again, and everybody's rear end started to get a little tighter. You couldn't drive a nail with a sledgehammer through it. And then all of a sudden, when that momentum happens and that dude gets in a rhythm, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. And it's the best, maybe not just the best, I mean, it's one of the best football games, let alone on the biggest stage. We crave and yearn for something to live up to the hype, and it sure as hell did.
Sean, we're going to have this conversation. We've been having it about Tom Brady for some time now, but after winning his fifth Super Bowl, being there seven times and just absolutely dominating and owning all these Super Bowl records, does this win finally put it to bed that he's the best of all time?
It was to bed before this game for me. Mm. I love Joe. I do. And I know I'm on a station talking now into Joe Montana territory. Well, I played during, I think, the greatest quarterback era ever. Montana, Young, Elway, Kelly, Marino, Favre. I mean, the list goes on. That was the group. I played during that group and watched all those great players play. Kelly, I mean, the list goes on and on. And Dan and I, Marino and I talked about it this week, and you'll get a Warren Moon. I mean, guys, as good as Jen and Joe, I know people say, well, he won four. Yeah, but he didn't play in seven. Nobody's done more with less. Tom Brady's got one Hall of Famer on his team, guys. One.
Right.
And that's Randy Moss, and he had him for what?
One year.
Yeah. I mean, so that's not to diminish what Joe's done. But if we're comparing the best of all time, going into this game, I felt Tom was the best of all time. On his way into seven, three MVPs, four championships, the roster just keeps changing, and the different dude's a hero. I said on Dan Patrick's show this week, when Dan asked me this very same question, I said, Dan, it's not about who the best quarterback is anymore. And people up in San Francisco are going to hate this too, because I think the best football players, Peyton, Jerry Rice, Jim Brown, that group. I saw Barry Sanders, and I thought he was the best running back in person I ever saw. Tom Brady's no longer just the best quarterback of all time. When we get out our NFL Network list and say, list the top 100 football players of all time, he's the best. He had 93 snaps yesterday, 70 snaps a game, his hands on the ball most of the time, 65 snaps a game. He's done it five times, four MVPs, in the most dramatic fashion, and a handful of them, and a couple of them last night. I mean, if you don't believe in it now, people got to take their emotions out who their favorite is. Tom Brady's got Elway, I've always thought, was the most talented quarterback that ever played. But he's done it every way. He's got the gaudy stats. He's done it with Harry Hatchett, ass Joe Sixpack, and us three. He's been MVP. He's accurate. He's tough. He's won out in front. He's come from behind. And his best football player on his team, not name him, didn't play this year for the most part.
Yeah,
right.
He missed four games. I mean, so we can say it, and I trust me. Now, I remember at the end of the game, near the end of my career, Joe Montana, I swapped hats with Joe on the field leaving, just said, can I have your hat? And he said, yeah. So I'm a Montana lover, but come on, folks. You can't even argue this. The question is now, is he the best football player ever? You can argue that if you like. But he is distancing himself from the pack. And I'm going to tell you now, you heard it here first, this isn't his last Super Bowl. He's not done going. And that pains me, because I'm an Oakland Raider fan. Pains me to say that. Tom Brady hasn't made his last visit to a Super Bowl. I don't believe it. And I haven't looked at the odds, but I'll bet you anything they're the favorite next year. I'll bet you right now Vegas has them as the favorite. And I haven't even looked at the lines for next year. Tom Brady's the greatest. In my mind, people can go crazy all they want. I don't give a rat's ass. Tom Brady's the best football player we've ever had.
Sean Salisbury joining us on KHDK. Last thing for you then. One last thing we were talking about, main point. This last 12 months, Sean, you look at Villanova's last second shot. The Cavs get their first title coming back from 3-1 down. Cubs facing the Indians. Cubs coming back from 3-1 down. Clemson upsetting Alabama. Throw in, Federer and Serena Williams. The Olympics. Leicester City being 5,000-1 dogs. And then the Super Bowl last night. Is this the greatest 12-month stretch we've seen in sports history?
No question. Doesn't matter who you root for. We've been on the edge of our seat on many of these. And you go back, you said 3-1 the Cavs series, 3-1 the Cubs series. And think about who won the Cubs series. The Cubs.
Yeah.
So that even makes it more dramatic. Yeah. Think about the Cavs. They were beating they beat a team that we considered the best team, I mean, record ever.
Yeah.
And they went in down 3-1 and beat them after that team had to come back against Oklahoma City and beat them. And then you take a look at now this time, and oh, by the way, Tom Brady's team scored 31, 3-1. They scored 31 straight points. So, yeah, things are crazy, and it's been an unbelievable year of sports and an unbelievable year of, I mean, this is what it's, and you can't help whether you're a Cubs fan or a Cavs or Golden State, you can't help or last night say, damn, this is why we do this. This is why we tune in and have parties and sit there. Guys, I woke up yesterday morning so jacked up for this game and watching it. And then you're sitting there watching it. And I, you know, take notes through the entire game. I'm watching this and watching these guys make play after play on both teams. And I'm like, this is nothing short of phenomenal. And then that ball started rolling downhill. This is exactly why we're sports fans. Doesn't matter who you root for. The crap we watched this year, when I say crap, I mean that in an affectionate way. And then last night, to cap it off, it's been an unbelievable 12 months. And I guarantee you, something crazy is going to happen in this year's NCAA basketball tournament that's going to shock us as well.
Sean Salisbury is with us on KHTK. Sean, one of the things I think we all noticed last night, early on in the game, Tom Brady was not good. He was missing a lot of throws, but and as good as that Falcons pass rush was, I noticed on some of the replays, it seemed like he was not just missing throws, but he was slow on some of his reads, and some of those hits were a result of the coverage. What were the Falcons doing to kind of throw him off, and then what clicked in the second half?
Well, I'll tell you what it reminded me. Two things that remind me of. First of all, remember how Deshaun Watson started his national title game this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the guy had been in two in a row. Yeah. Boy, he for about a quarter and a half. We're looking like, what the hell is wrong with this dude? And then all of a sudden, he like went over there and it kicked in. And then he played like a monster and validated why we should all say that he plays his best and biggest games and he's the best quarterback in this year's draft, at least on paper and the way it looks, and his performance in big games. Brady had a feel for that. Same thing. The thing that stuck out, I saw on the lick, I can overwrap Edelman. He missed him like 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Brady, well, in a clean pocket, he does not miss those throws. And I thought, maybe this just isn't his day, you know, because he did. You're exactly right. I'll tell you what the Falcons did. First of all, the Patriots played East and West football early. You watch when Blunt bounced that first third down outside, boom, they stopped him. You can't play East-West football against them. You can play shallow cross or throw checkdowns, as Tom, to the tune of 43 completions and 466 yards. But it started out where they were playing East-West football, and Atlanta's speed was too much. But it reminded me of the early Denver Broncos-Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl when Seattle would let them catch it, and then they'd tackle. Catch and tackle, catch and tackle. They gave them no love after the catch. When on the other side, Atlanta, every time they touched the ball, they were making sunk plays, and that was the biggest problem earlier, the first half or first two and a half quarters of the football game. And then it was almost as if Brady went into halftime, and the best in-game adjuster in the history of this game is Bill Belichick. They went in there and came out slow again early, and then bam, midway in that third quarter, you started to see it. But to me, it just looked like Tom was there was a lot going on in his mind. You're right, a little bit late, wasn't as accurate. And then when he got going, there's a reason why they didn't need to run it. They mixed in the run once in a while, but they abandoned it because the guy was throwing 20-yard comebacks as if they were handoffs. That's how accurate he was that went on. But are we surprised, guys? I've always said when I train my quarterbacks, I say, I told them all, send them a message, watch him and tape this game. And when it's over, go back and watch it again and watch his mechanics under duress. When it's the worst, when things are going horrible, watch his mechanics. And they were going horrible for him. He stared down the receiver on the interception for a touchdown, threw it right to the squat and safety, threw it right to him for a touchdown. That was on Tom. He threw it right to him. But watch his mechanics when things got – as the temperature of the game continued to rise and they were down by 25, what did he do? He did not change one thing about his mechanics. He just got dialed in, and eventually it takes over. And then the guys is – we talk about all the other stuff. He's just mentally and emotionally tough. Is any guy who's ever played. He just is. He knows when if we put a heart monitor on him last night, his poise in the fourth quarter would have been better off than it was in the first quarter. I mean, it would have been lower. His blood pressure would have been lower. And if you go back and look in history at Tom Brady in huge games like this, he always starts slow.
he's not a fast starter. He just isn't. He gets so jacked up early, he misses a few throws, and then he settles in. And par for the course for him last night to do it again. It's just 25 points and 31 straight. Last night was a different – he's in a different stratosphere after last night.
Sean Salisbury joining us this morning on KHDK. I've got to ask you, and this is a question that's going to go around for some time when it comes to decision-making by Kyle Shanahan. 8:31 left in the game. You're up 16, 3rd-and-1 on your own 36, and Shanahan calls for a deep pass play. Of course, that results in the forced fumble, and it ends up being 28-20 after that for the Patriots. Was that the right call? If you're the Falcons, do you make that decision because that's who you are, or do you play it safe and play to win?
I don't ever play to lose. I don't ever play not to lose. I play to win. But throwing the ball deep on 3rd-and-1, backed up when you got a lead, even if you hand off and have to punt, the field still flips.
Yeah.
It's not like we're saying this after. I'm sitting there saying, you got to line up, run the football, or at least give me like a sprint right run where Matt can run, throw option, throw it to the flat. If it's incompletion, no big deal. You got to change the launch point of the quarterback once in a while. Because if the defense knows all the time where he's going to set up, that's where they attack the pass rush too. They get right to the point, and they got to the point. I didn't like that call. And on the other way, going in to drop back, Matt Ryan holding the football to help them out of field goal range, and then an offensive holding penalty, kick that. That was it. If they just run the football, kick a field goal, they're up by 11. Ball game probably over, guys. There would have been enough time on the clock.
So, I have to ask, though, Sean, if you're Matt Ryan in that situation, and that is the call that you're getting from your offensive coordinator, you've been in that situation as a quarterback. Do you question that, or do you say, okay?
Of course you do. But you also trust that things have gone so well. Here's the assistant coach of the year, as voted by the NFL. You think Kyle's making the right call? But it's not just the call. Matt's got to throw that away. He's a veteran quarterback, and when you have to take one hit, two hits, three, you throw it away. You cannot take that sack. It's on him. He's got to throw it away and throw it out of bounds. Hell, even if you just have to. But Kyle's also got to know the situation of the game. Guys, we talk about players. Nobody wants to hear the choke factor. We just don't like to hear it. We don't like to hear when a guy misses a 4-foot putt on the 18th green in a major. We just don't like to hear it. But it happens. Eventually, the mentor, meaning Bill Belichick, beat the pupil. And Josh said, Kale, Shanahan was out doing their staff the whole game. But when it got the nut cut in time, you saw the difference. And so Matt's got to throw it away. I didn't like the call. And backed up, even if you are going to throw it on 3rd-and-1, you can't have one where you're sitting back there milking the ball, holding it. It's 3 or 4, it's never one play. It's 6 to 8 plays a game that change the course of a game. And in this game, that's about what it was, 6 to 8, 8 to 10 plays. And so you got to throw it away as a veteran. You're the MVP of the league, and Kyle's got to know better. So let's not just talk about players under pressure, maybe losing it a little bit and getting caught up and choking a little bit. Quite frankly, coaches do too. And last night, the Atlanta Falcons made some mistakes down the stretch that cost them, and Belichick, Patricia, and Josh McDaniel didn't. And there you go. They made their mistakes early and were able to do what they do, and they played 60-plus minutes to win the championship. And you knew when they won the coin toss in overtime, and Tom got him going with a few quick completions, that this game was over. You knew the momentum. It was as if they were so deflated they couldn't get off the field after that. But you can't, as a player and a coach, you've got to understand the game situation. And it's tough, but that's why they're the best in the world and get paid like it. And number 12 on New England performed better when the game was at its highest temperature.
So who had the worst performance? Kyle Shanahan and his series of calls or no calls yesterday for the Falcons, or Darrell Bevell and his one call that led to the Malcolm Butler interception?
You know what? I think the series of calls, because we all make one stupid play.
Yeah.
But at some point, you got to stop the nonsense and say, man, okay, we got to get back into what made us great early. Checkdowns for big plays. Our backs were involved. We were running the football success. They were gashing them. They were gashing them. I mean, they in the first 2.5 quarters, they did whatever they wanted offensively. Anything they wanted, meaning Atlanta. Now, Bevell's call. Now, you guys go back to that Seattle and New England game. Think about this. I believe Seattle was waiting for Belichick to call timeout down there, you know, to get their defense set. And I think that what happened also in that game, and we don't talk about it enough, is Belichick didn't call timeout.
Yep.
He allowed them to go play. So I think on the sidelines, Bevell and Pete Carroll, like, okay, let's call the play. I think it was one of those a little bit frantic. They called the wrong play. And, guys, it wasn't just the play call that was wrong. Think about the execution if you're Malcolm Butler to drive on that throw. When you're throwing it that hard down by the goal line, what usually happens? The ball hits off a guy's shoulder pad
yeah.
and bounces for an incomplete pass. For him to catch that ball that was nothing short of spectacular. But when you make a series of blunders and calls that are questionable, you just start to wonder. You hope Kyle didn't have one toe out the door when they had a 28-3, you know, when they had a 25-point lead, 28-3, and was thinking about who his next quarterback in San Francisco is going to be, because they did not close out the deal. But I hate it when people say, oh, the Falcons choked it and gave it away. There's a reason why teams choke and give it away, because the other dude's getting paid too, and New England's pretty good. Their presence is pretty relevant and pretty big and ginormous when it comes to, oh my gosh, we got to beat this team. And their presence and their execution was better than Atlanta's when it mattered.
Sean, we're already out of time. There's so much we could talk about. We're already over. I want to sneak this in. Are people smoking drugs with Terrell Owens not getting in the Hall of Fame, or am I off there?
I think so. Guys, you know, we all have our, you know, like, oh, man, here goes T.O. again. The truth of the matter is, how he's not comes down to one thing. You're not supposed to make this personal. I don't know what the criteria is. I just don't anymore. I was talking to a Hall of Famer this week, and he said the same thing. I don't even know what it is anymore. Can't tell this guy the reason we don't put him in, or this guy in. Then it changes for the other guy. I have no argument with guys that are in. I was surprised they put TD in, Terrell Davis. Yeah. Not that he didn't deserve it. I thought they'd hold back on him a little because of the shortness of his career. But for 5 years, he dominated football. I get it, and I'm so happy they did. But, yes, there's absolutely no question. This, to me, is very simply a personal thing, because when you look at the raw numbers of it, the Hall of Fame voters need to wake their ass up.
We appreciate it, Sean. You know, in the past, we'd plug your Twitter account, you know, at Sean Unfiltered, because your local show is tough for people to hear. But you got a new gig now. You want to put that out?
Yeah,
there?
You can find us at the S on Twitter at S Salisbury Show, and we kicked it off last week. And instead of it's no longer called Prime Cut. We got a new team, and it was an unbelievable first week. And in about 3 weeks, it'll be on national TV. But it's the Sean Salisbury Show, and it's 4 to 8 Eastern. You can find it on SB Nation Radio if you are an affiliate near you. We have a lot of affiliates everywhere. Or podcastarena.com. If you miss it, the podcast's up every day. So I appreciate it, guys.
Love it, buddy. You deserve it all. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks. Appreciate you guys anytime. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Take care. We're way over late. We'll take a break right now. When we come back, Dennis has been holding for a while. Dennis has got a cheating take. Tom Brady cheating take. Here we go. We'll do that in your phone calls at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We'll recap a lot of these questions we've been talking about as well. And don't think we forgot about the Kings and Warriors. That's coming up at 8:47. We'll break that down. There's a game tonight. Kings and Bulls. You got to beat the Bulls. Please don't do this to us, Kings. You just beat the damn Warriors. Don't do this. We'll take a break. It's a drive back in three. Sports 1140 KHDK. That's just the international flavor.
Having come back from the dead.
They're all so good, but I love British commentary so much because you have this kind of matter-of-fact nature of it, but it's also so understated.
Yes.
The most remarkable of circumstances.
There's no better
way to put it.
Nope.
When they're talking about the colors of the uniform, it's with a U.
They're artists. World Cup a few years ago, Robin Van Persie's diving header is still one of the most spectacular plays I've ever seen. And it's the guys running to the sideline. Like all the commentator says is the incomparable Robin Van Persie. Like,
yep.
Perfect. Do it the right way, though.
Perfect.
Glorious.
Do it the accent.
The incomparable Robin Van Persie.
Dennis, you're on the drive.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call, Dave. How y'all doing today?
Good. Katie and Nate took the call too, though.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you all for taking the call.
He pushed the button.
I did push the button. Go ahead, buddy.
So really what I said was I was about to give Tom Brady some credit. Then I saw that no touchdown, you know, that he wasn't a touchdown. But I'm going to make it very clear. The comeback, I don't like Brady. I don't like Belichick. But the comeback for sports purposes was absolutely awesome. But how can you call him great when there's been a shroud of cheating over all the Super Bowls? Now, this one, no cheating. Maybe they blew a call. Blown calls happen. So I want to make it clear. I have to give him for having skill, both the coach and the quarterback. But you know, we got some iffiness here, so how can we call him great with all the cheating and all the over his whole career, the shroud of stuff? That was what I said. I guess I didn't make it clear when I called, but that's where I'm at.
Hey, Dennis, I have a question. So in all five Super Bowls, there's a shroud of cheating over that?
Well, it's my understanding that there has been, you know, but I'm softening on it because of what he did yesterday. Start off playing like crud, finish great, which, you know, they always say he always did. You know, I just don't want to put him above people like Joe Montana, that there was never a shroud of cheating around.
What I ask people, you know, rather than getting all breathless and crazy, who would you put ahead of Brady?
me, only Joe Montana. That's my.
And I mean, so, right.
Putting him right there with everybody else, but I just don't think we can put him as the greatest because of the stuff that's surrounded him. That's
okay,
all.
And to that, I would say this. I would say that back in Joe Montana's day, you had nowhere near the salary cap issues and ramifications and rules that you had today. Carmen Policy was convicted of cheating the salary cap multiple times. Yep. The owner, Eddie DeBartolo, was booted out of the league. An owner booted out of the league because he did some things. And Jerry Rice admitted that he used Stickum on his glove. So if we want to talk just cheating, I would say the 49ers cheated just as much, and you could argue more than the Pats did.
Well, they did cheat that salary cap. You're right, but I honestly don't remember ever hearing that Jerry Rice admitted to
he admitted it. It was a few years ago. He went public.
It just goes to show of the mentality of that if you're not cheating, you ain't trying, which
win
I don't really
costs.
Like.
That's exactly
You got to give it to him, regardless of my stance on great or not. The comeback, absolutely spectacular.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call.
That was exactly
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Thank you. And I think I just hit the delay in there, Matt, instead of the hang-up button. I don't know if that – yeah, I did. So we sound really high right now. See the size of that chicken.
See, we want to – I mean, as much as we want to pretend this stuff is virtuous, but he absolutely said it right there. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Everybody knows that. That's competition, man. And, sometimes it manifests itself in the form of needles and steroids, like in baseball. Sometimes it's filming a closed practice session. Sometimes it's cheating the salary cap. But, dude, if we want to go down the list of champions with nefarious moral qualities, I don't know if we have enough time for that.
I'll take you back. I'll take you back to 2013. And I don't know to what degree the Patriots cheated or didn't. And no one will ever know for the following reason. The Boston Herald claimed that after New England's final walkthrough before the Super Bowl, a member of the Patriots staff stayed behind and secretly taped the Rams, saying, quote, according to the report, an unnamed source close to the team said a member of the team's video staff stayed behind and taped the Rams' walkthrough.
Where?
The cameraman was not asked to identify himself or produce a press pass and later rode the media shuttle back to the Pats Hotel. It's worth noting, though, that the Herald later retracted the report and issued an apology to the Patriots. See, we forget this. They retracted it. They apologized, stating, quote, we now know that this report was false and that no tape of the walkthrough ever existed. The problem
right. That's
is...
That's what they want you to think.
Sure. Well, yeah, because they're probably getting death threats.
Conspiracy theorists
and
over
I
here.
Get that. I get that. But here's why there's a conspiracy, and here's why you think maybe something happened. Roger Goodell destroyed all the evidence.
All of it.
So it's hilarious in a sad way that you fast forward to this year and the Patriots fans believe in Goodell.
So
they hate him so much when he destroyed any evidence they may have had.
You know what? It's not, though, because this whole thing goes back to that and him trying to make up for the fact that he looked like a stooge when he did that. And he's had a vendetta against Tom Brady and the Patriots ever since. I believe that. And, Patriot fan conspiracy theories are one of the most annoying things out there. But I feel very comfortable saying that if Roger Goodell had handled that correctly and not destroyed all the evidence, Deflategate would not have been a thing.
I think that's very fair. And by the way, we have a present for you, Nate, because Matt George is so freaking on it today. You mentioned how great it is to have these English commentators. You referenced the Robin Van Persie goal from back in the World Cup. I think it was two World Cups ago, if I remember correctly.
Might have been.
Here's Van Persie and here's the call. Is that Martin Tyler? I think
that's
that was.
Question.
It sounds like Martin Tyler.
I mean, it was a TV call, but I love how it lets it breathe.
Yes.
And I mean, if you watch the play, it's spectacular. But he lets it breathe and then just drops the line. Incomparable.
I like the idea of, I don't know, since you mentioned that, I'm now starting to run through my head like different English phrases that they use on broadcasts for Grant Napier to use and how it would sound.
Oh, my God.
Well, remarkable is a good start.
Could you
imagine Grant dropping incomparable, but if you don't like that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, in that kind of...
That's incomparable.
Incomparable!
He doesn't have the tone.
That's a cheeky flick. But then on the other hand, can you imagine somebody else going, and it looks like we've got a dandy in Leicester City. It doesn't... Does not
if
work.
If you don't
either.
Like that, you don't like the British Premier League. Doesn't quite have the same. I think we gotta appreciate him in different veins, man.
Put the yellow card in the book and send him to the locker room. He's been red carded. This could take up the whole rest of the show. And we're already the old. By the way, this just in. It's on the crawl on the bottom line here. Literally the only show in the entire world that's played a soccer highlight today.
That's right.
The
good job,
only
everybody.
Show. That's us. Matt, you're on KHTK. No other Matt. Not Matt George. Matt on the phone. Hi, Matt.
I just wanted to bring up something about the Patriots and cheating.
Oh, no.
You guys remember Shanahan's playbook going, his offensive playbook going missing?
Yes.
For a couple hours?
Yeah.
conspiracy theory right there.
Well, what?
Yeah, okay, but he got it back, and it had nobody from the Patriots were. Don't put your backpack down then.
But here's
don't
the
put
thing.
Your backpack down.
Where was that playbook cheating in the first half though?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, there's
well,
like,
and which Falcon stole Tom Brady's jersey, huh?
Yeah, And by the way, it was San Francisco Examiner writer Art Spander who picked it up.
Art Spander. You got to get Art on the show.
Yeah, exactly. Art Spander, like Art Rooney, who is the owner of Pittsburgh, which is in the AFC, which also the Patriots are in the AFC. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Keep going.
Give me the 11th caller. Give Katie the 11th caller. And Nate, don't give him anything.
I don't want any of your calls.
339-1140-1800-920-1140. And you can win the Bearco moment of the game. Just know what the Bearco moment of the game was. You'll win fun and prizes. British Grant Napier, put that in the registry and send him to get free points. That's a texter. And then finally, I'm no longer jealous that Tom Brady gets to sleep with Giselle. I'm jealous she gets to sleep with him. We're back in three. Don't go away on the Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Want to thank everybody again for coming out to yesterday's big game golf tournament. Fun, prizes galore. The rain avoided us, so thank you, rain gods. And I just got a text. The group I played in was such, they were so great.
They were so awesome.
They gave us tamales, of which Katie gave me 2 out of 400.
There was not 400.
And
exaggerator.
Miguel and the rest of everybody that I played with, they were teaching me, they were all Latino. They were teaching me Spanish. They were calling, I was like the honorary gringo and all that. And they were making fun. But it was, when you play in these things, it's 30% the tournament and 70% the people that you're with. And they were an absolute blast. One of them, we all exchanged numbers at the end. We're all going to go out and play golf again. And one of them just texted me and said, thanks for playing with us yesterday. Tried to call the show, couldn't get in. Had an absolute blast. So thank you guys.
Just to be clear, and I met these gentlemen. They were very nice.
Yes.
But they played 18 holes of golf with you and want to do it again.
I know. So not the smartest people in the world.
Well, it's because Dave sunk a putt on the first hole.
Oh,
and
then
after shanking his tee shot, he took a mulligan on the first tee shot.
Let me tell you something. My putter was flaming yesterday. And not in that way. The other, the one where you're on fire. Uh-huh.
You are like the world champion, and I'm not even kidding about this. You are the world champion follow-up putter.
Yes.
I've seen it repeatedly in scrambles.
That's what I
can
do.
Someone shows you the line, your money.
I can point and follow. If I can I can stand behind you and bend over and watch the putt, I can do it. But Nate still gets the all-time greatest putt ever, the $350 putt that saved us from buying clothes at the Wynn that he hit off the green, about a 37-foot triple freaking breaker.
I was like 57, I think, now.
You know what? By the time you're 40 and I'm 50, it's going to be a 100-foot putt. This happened the other day, but and by the way, congratulations to Candace in Sacramento, who just won the Bearco moment of the game. She gets all kinds of Bearco fun and prizes, including a $50 Redwood gift certificate and a King's prize pack.
Hey.
I was just waiting. I had landed from New Orleans right as the third quarter ended. I watched the fourth quarter in overtime at the airport.
Were you still full of hurricanes?
You know, honestly, did not drink at all. I drank, what was it, Friday night? I don't like to drink the day I fly, which is the exact opposite of
you.
Because I get terrible hangovers. And when you add that to the air pressure, anyways, I was just watching and waiting for the Kings to blow it. I just knew they were going to, and I couldn't allow. See, everybody got excited for the game and had fun. And I don't know if I'm the only one out there that thinks like this, but I was prevented about 30% while watching the game from truly having fun because I knew they were going to lose, and I didn't want to be hurt again. And then they won. But I just can't watch it like that because I know they're going to lose.
Well, and the way they do it, too. I mean, hey, 340 left. They're up one, 175 to one odds, and somehow they still manage to make a comeback. But I mean, you watch the way it works out, and I guess if you look back at it and you think about things like Draymond Green gets hurt and that's kind of a thing, Steve Kerr gets ejected. Like, if you look at that from the broad perspective, the Kings needed those things to happen. And Grant, and I talked to you about this yesterday, Katie. You're like, I think Steve Kerr getting ejected actually helped them.
Yeah, I think it helped the Warriors.
Which may
yeah.
be the case. But story of the game, though, you say, if you were to say before, you know, Draymond gets hurt, Steve Kerr gets ejected, you're like,
Draymond came back. He didn't miss a ton of time.
But it's still like those little things happening. If you had said that before the game, you'd be like, you're damn right those things need to happen for the Kings to win the game.
And Katie, I'll let you finish with this. You take the baton and take us home here. Grant said it during the broadcast, and I think it's the best question to be asked all weekend. Will the real Sacramento Kings please stand up? What the hell do we have in this team?
I think this is something that you see. This is a talented team. It's a roster that they keep saying over and over. DeMarcus says it's the best roster that I've had since I've been here in Sacramento, and I agree with him. The problem is, and this isn't just a Kings thing, this is an average NBA team problem. They play up to the level of their competition and down to the level of their competition.
Yeah.
That's where you see what happens when you lose to the worst team in the Western Conference on Friday and you beat the best team in the Western Conference on Saturday. And how teams go from being mediocre, run-of-the-mill, middle-of-the-pack NBA teams to being playoff, you know, champion, contender-type teams is you play your game all the time regardless of who your opponent is.
So, Nate, is it more of the team that we saw lose to the Suns, lose to the Sixers, lose to, you know, blow leads against Indiana twice, et cetera, is that closer to the real Sacramento Kings? Or is the team that beat the Cavs in overtime, is the team that beat the Warriors the other night and that has had some very solid, especially road wins this year, is that closer to the real Sacramento Kings team?
Record says it's the team that blows it.
Yeah.
And that's what I lean towards, just because if you look at the Warriors' 8 losses this year, darn near all of them are kind of fluky.
Yeah.
And the Cavs have struggled a little bit more, but it's kind of one of those things where they're going to have to take losses sometimes. I don't believe this is a team that can compete with those
but
teams,
you,
come on.
You can't sit there and say, oh, they lost to the 70. Every single team has that, where they lose to a lesser opponent. But the 76ers, if you look at how they were playing in November when we were supposed to play them versus January when we did play them, they beat a lot of teams. They were a really, really good. They're a much better team, and you're in love with them, Dave, and that's how it is. But when you beat Toronto, when you beat Portland, when you beat
Toronto, twice.
Like, they have a bunch of great quality wins. But here's the thing with the Kings is you have a new coach, new system. It's year one. What does year two look like?
Well, they're
better now than they were when we, you know, saw them touch the floor in October and in November. Every month they're getting better. Can we not at least concede that?
What difference does it make? They're 11 games under 500. They're in the 11th spot. They
Nate,
stink.
Did you expect a turnaround this year? Like complete, like,
no, I'm just
playoff
saying, let's
team?
Not pretend they don't stink.
I'll end the show personally, because the same way I started the show, I will channel my inner Christensen here. I think you're both right, and I honest to God think, and I'll explain this in a limited amount of time. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. I don't think they're as good as the team that beat the Warriors and the Cavs. I think that's the upper end, and the other teams had to play down. I certainly don't think they're as bad as the team that lost to the Suns. I do think this team is right there in the middle. I think this team should be sniffing around 500. That's where they should be.
I just want to see them get better. I want them to be making progress, and that is exactly what they're doing right now, and they're doing it with injuries.
Would you have said the same thing after the Phoenix game, though?
Yeah.
That they were still making progress?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was a last-second shot that won it, a bank shot
by
Devin Booker.
They had to be in a position to hit that last-second shot,
I get
shot,
that,
though.
But you also look at circumstance.
We'll continue this argument tomorrow, bright and early at 6 a.m. We had a big show, and I guarantee you, D'Lo and the rest of the crew, Ken and Jason, the lowdown, they're going to have a huge show for you noon to 3, and then Grant takes the baton at 3 all the way up to the Sacramento Kings. Pre-game 6:30, tip-off 7:30 right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.